Hello, and welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is a bi-monthly digest of original crime and mystery fiction. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. Our podcast series features readings of short stories from our back issues to give you a sense of what the magazine is about. For this episode, we bring you Melody Campbell, reading her story, Santa Baby, from the January-February 2009 issue of AHMM. Melody Campbell is the author of The Bootlegger's Goddaughter, the latest in a series of humorous capers set in Hamilton, Ontario, and featuring Gina Gallo, a gemologist and reluctant goddaughter. Her other novels include Worst Date Ever and the Land's End Fantasy Trilogy. Her writing has also garnered her numerous awards, including the Derringer Award, presented by the Short Mystery Fiction Society, and the Arthur Ellis Award, presented by the Crime Writers of Canada. After the reading, Melody will talk a little about her background in comedy.
Santa got whacked sometime after midnight on the night before Christmas. Not a creature was stirring on most of the mountain, but 'twas a different story on Country Club Drive. Someone with a grudge and a killer swing had smashed a fireplace poker over Santa's head. I stumbled over the body with my morning coffee. It was dead cold in the living room. I shivered violently and sat down to think. Snow had fallen overnight, and morning light cascaded through the French doors, highlighting the victim on the floor. I checked to see if the doors were locked. Then I climbed the circular stairs to the master bedroom and woke Mary Ann. "Wake up, honey," I said quietly, patting her shoulder. She was all sleepy-eyed and murmured "Merry Christmas" to me. But I couldn't help but think of all those other Christmas mornings long ago, when we had both raced down the stairs to be first to the tree. I sat on the edge of the ivory duvet and stroked her arm. "Something bad happened, Mary Ann, and you're going to have to be brave." She sat up suddenly and clutched my sleeve. I told her about the scene in the living room. Then I called the police. When Macquarie arrived at the house with the uniform troops, he recognized me and grinned, sent the troops to do SoCo work in the living room, and followed me into the study. "Hey, Red, got a name for the fat man on the floor? And don't tell me it's Nick." "My name isn't Red, and my hair isn't red, it's auburn. Like all the women in legal aid, I've had to put up with a lot of veiled chauvinism guised as kidding, and some not so veiled. Macquarie walks the line, and if I thought he were really serious, I'd shove his face down his throat. Instead, I call him Mac, and occasionally Big Mac, like the burger, which is appropriate, as he's actually pretty yummy. Walter Mellon, my brother-in-law, 54, hotshot lawyer," I said. "Not a hacker like me. One of those financial wheeler dealers in Toronto." Mac groaned. "A whole shitload of suspects, then. Who wouldn't want to whack 'em?" He ran a hand through thick brown hair. "The widow's your sister?" "Yep, Mary Ann Mellon, 41. Occupation is looking after her gorgeous self." Mac whistled. "Do I detect a little sarcasm?" "Not really," I replied. "Just being honest. She got the looks and I got the career," I said carefully. Mac plunked his butt down on the caramel leather couch and pulled out a pad. "You got the looks too, Red. I'm going to start with you. You can put me in the picture. We're short-handed today. Only us single guys on the beat." "Fine by me," I said cheerfully. "So, did you like the Vic? I used to call him Wally the Wanker." Mac snorted. "Not number one on your hit parade." I shook my head. "Too full of himself for my liking, but he was good to my sister." Mac looked around. "You don't live here?" I laughed. "Oh, no, this is Walter's mansion. I'm just here for Christmas. I've got a small condo in Burlington." Mac smiled. "So I got a chance after all." "There's a daughter from his first marriage," I said quickly. "Jessica, she's okay. Still in graduate school. Lives with a guy called Chase Sparrow, also in graduate school. They're coming here for dinner." "Or maybe not," I thought grimly. "Chase what? What the hell kind of name is that?" I shrugged. It was going to be a long day with no turkey. "Anyone else?" "Not living here," I said. Marianne can tell you more. Let's bring the lovely lady in, shall we? Stay here, counselor. I wouldn't want to get out of line. He leaned back into the leather upholstery and grinned. I'll go call her, I said. I left the room and returned swiftly. Marianne entered the room. That's the only way to put it. Enter, stage left, enigmatic expression. Hesitate, tentative smile. Mac was off the couch and on his feet in a flash. Mrs. Mellon, I'm very sorry for your loss. We're going to do everything possible to find your husband's killer. Oh, she sounded more bewildered than bereaved. Thank you. Her voice was breathless, like a little girl's. I cringed. Can you think of any person who might want to kill your husband? Oh, she said, widening her tearful blue eyes. You see, there are just so many, aren't there, Josie? She appealed to me. Wally was a really successful man, and there are lots of people who don't like that. They're jealous. You can't imagine. My mouth flew open. No, he can't imagine because he's so darn unsuccessful. Holy cow, Marianne, watch your tongue. I decided to take the lead. You've heard of Merton Investments, Mac? The outfit on Bay Street that went belly up a few weeks ago and left a whole lot of people without pensions. That's the one, I said. Walter Mellon was one of the principals. No shit, he said, writing furiously. That's a lead and a half. The captain himself lost a bundle. Any threats made against him, Mrs. Mellon? Marianne frowned. I don't know. You could ask his secretary. I'll get her number. She stood up, went to the desk, and came back with a business card. Something winkled and reflected in the light. As she swept by, I grabbed her wrist and gasped. Marianne, where did you get that bracelet? From Wally, for Christmas. He tried to hide it, but I found it in his desk drawer last night, and he let me have it early. I'm bad that way. You always were, I murmured. Isn't it stunning, she said, swinging her wrist around so as to catch the light. What time was this, Mrs. Mellon? She looked up sharply. About 12:30. So you can definitely state that Mr. Mellon was alive at 12:30 last night. Yes, definitely, Marianne said firmly. Can you prove that he gave you the bracelet last night and not some other day, Mrs. Mellon? It might be important. Marianne stared at him and said, just a minute. When she left the room, I made my case. It had to be last night, Mac. I've never seen it before, and Marianne isn't a type to keep thing like that under wraps. Not her. Mac gazed at me like he was seeing right through me. I know she's your sister, and it's unfair to ask you, he said. But was their relationship solid? I shrugged. As far as I know, he wanted a trophy wife, and she loved playing the part. He was always giving her things. I think she was very happy. I continued softly. Her first husband was an unfaithful rat. Broke her heart. Second time around, she wanted stability, you know? The money was a nice bonus. His brown eyes met mine. At first, I didn't think you liked her much. Now I'm changing my mind. She's not so bad, I said uncertainly. She's just vulnerable. Needs looking after. I've always felt like I was the older sister instead of the other way around. Mac's eyes softened. You really are a very nice person, he said. Marianne swept into the room like an operatic diva. Here it is, she said triumphantly. She had a small blue box in one hand and held out a card to Mac with the other. He took it and read aloud. To Peach Buns, love you forever. From Porky your Santa on Christmas 2007. Christ, it almost rhymes. Mac was choking back laughter. I grabbed the note. Porky? You called him Porky? He was so good to me, Marianne started to sniff. I'm going to miss my Porky so much. She started to sob in earnest. Oh, God, Josie, what am I going to do? I moved to put my arms around her. Mac, maybe we should... Sure, Red. I'll see how the others are coming along. He left around noon. The rest of the team did what they had to do, and I sent Marianne to lie down. The afternoon inched along. I was deep in thought when Mac phoned later that evening. Hey, his voice was soft velvet. What's happening over there now? Not much, I replied. The troops have gone. I've talked to the lawyer in the funeral hall, but I guess we can't plan a date yet. Any journalists call? Oh, God, Mac, I forgot about them, I said. No, none so far. You tell me if they give you any trouble. I smiled in the dark. The silence between us was comforting. Why did you really phone? Mac sighed. The weapon was wiped clean and the French doors were unlocked. That snowfall last night wiped out any footprints. Secretary confirms there have been lots of death threats. With the failure of Merton Investments, I got maybe 800 suspects. He paused. Thought I'd let you know. I let out my breath. Thanks, Mac. Yeah, yeah, he said carelessly. I'm a prince in frog clothing. A pause. Call you sometime, okay? Okay, I replied softly. The phone went click. 100 memories fought for space in my mind. 2 sisters, big and small, walking hand in hand. The first wedding with Marianne as goddess and me playing the part of gawky little sister. Marianne waving and cheering as I walked upstage to receive my degree. One sobbing sister holding another at the funeral. Marianne taking a baseball bat to the ex's car. I walked into the 2-story great room. Outside, snow continued to fall. Marianne, I said slowly and deliberately, about that note, when did Wally start calling you peach buns? Marianne fingered a cigarette package on the coffee table. He didn't, she said coldly. Her right hand lifted the package, Walter's package, and crushed it. Who was she, do you think? Linda was asking me how I got started writing comedy. I was the class clown. Mm-hmm. Every comedian that I know, certainly woman, who is still writing comedy, was the class clown in school. We've been doing it since we were young. In my particular case, my only brother is autistic. Mm-hmm. And our house was one of sorrow and fear at times. And to develop kind of a way of coping, I started to make up stories. And I found that if I made people laugh, then the whole atmosphere in the house improved. It was easier to take. And so I took that to school with me too. Mm-hmm. And whenever I was in a stressful situation, I would start to look for the funny. And then it kind of became natural. So all the time I was working up through school and university and then in my first jobs in business, I was always the one cracking the jokes at the table until finally somebody told me, why aren't you doing stand-up? And so I did stand-up from there. And that led to a syndicated humor column. And then I started doing a little sketch comedy, had some plays produced, and then moved into fiction from there. So most of my fiction is comedy.
Thank you. Yeah. That was Melody Campbell reading her story, Santa Baby, from the January-February 2009 issue of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. We're published by Dell Magazines. We publish 6 double issues a year. To learn more about us, we urge you to go to our website, alfredhitchcockmysterymagazine.com, or look for us on Facebook or on our blog, traceevidence.net. You can find the magazine at your newsstand, and digital editions are available at all major e-tailers. This podcast was produced with the help of Jackie Sherbo and Deanna McLafferty. A special thanks to Melody Campbell, who took time out of her busy schedule helping to run the 2017 BoucherCon convention in Toronto to do this podcast for us. And thank you for listening.